This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is a practical show done by a practical guy like me. Well, this week I've got another great interview. I have Gabe Suarez, CEO of Suarez International. We're going to talk about some new guns that he's got out. And different products and things like that, and philosophy about self-defense, and you know what to carry and things like that. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Let me start by saying in the beginning that I've got some voicemails that people have called in, and that's probably going to be in next week's episode. I have another interview for you next week, but I'll do the voicemails first and then another interview with somebody else in the firearms industry next week. I want to try to keep this show in a reasonable time frame, and so I don't want to do the voicemails this week. But for all of you who called in, thank you very much. I'll be getting to your voicemails next week. If you want to call in and leave a comment about this episode or any other episode or just a general comment, 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727, and I'll put you on the Handgun World podcast. You can always email me, bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. I've got a Facebook page for the Handgun World podcast, a YouTube channel, a Twitter account. If you just search Handgun World, you will find me either in social media or you'll find me on the internet. It's not too difficult to do that. I always love getting emails and feedback, and I would love to hear from you. And if you've got some questions or anything that you want me to relay on to Gabe after you listen to this show, one of the things you might want to do is go to Warrior Talk, which is the forum for Suarez International. I'm going to start a thread on Warrior Talk for this podcast, for this interview. So it might be a good idea to put your questions there, warriortalk.com. And if you're not a member of warriortalk.com, you might want to consider signing up. I've been there many, many years, and it's a wealth of information. It's one of the very few gun forums that I even care to put any stuff out on anymore, because so many gun forums are just full of a lot of trolls and a lot of, I don't know, non-thinkers is kind of the way I want to put it. A lot of non-thinkers. So I've stopped participating in a lot of gun forums, but not Warrior Talk. I like Warrior Talk, and I like to go there frequently, and I have been. So check that out. Or you could just email me stuff if you want as well. And so with all that said, let's get right into the interview with Gabe Suarez. Hey, my special guest for this episode, I'm excited to have Gabe Suarez back. It's been like about 5 years. Welcome back, Gabe.
Hey, it's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, absolutely. You know, the last one we did got real good reviews. I actually replayed it again about 4 or 5 months ago, and it got good reviews again.
Well, that's great.
So I appreciate your time. So, Gabe, I have occasionally new listeners that tune into the Handgun World podcast, and they've heard me talk about you and your organization. The old listeners have. But for some new listeners, why don't you just give them a quick couple-minute biography?
Well, let's see, a couple-minute biography. Wow. Let's see, I was born in Havana, Cuba, in communism, and my family escaped and brought us all to America, and, I grew up here spent 15 years in law enforcement, have been teaching in one form or another since I was 16. I was teaching martial arts first and then later firearms, and did it as a business, expanded my organization about 10 years ago to include sales of material that supported the training, and that morphed into custom weapons and all sorts of things. And so
Right now, we're an actual corporation and company and everything, not so much just one person doing teaching. And, you know, as is evident by all the juggling that you and I had to do to organize this this interview, you know, we're busy. We're blessed. Our business is doing great. Training is doing great. And I got no complaints, except I don't sleep as much as I used to.
You know, likewise, I'm blessed with a whole lot of business in pretty much just about everything I'm doing. And it's truly a blessing. But I'm struggling for sleep and I'm struggling for organization.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I was just talking to a couple other folks doing podcasts, and you know, it seems like we have all sorts of time when something's a hobby, but as soon as it turns into a business and begins to thrive, it you know, it makes demands on you. And you know, any business is like a child. You know, you have to grow it and take care of it, and you can't neglect it, because you know, then all sorts of bad things happen. And you know, if you're successful, it takes a good amount of time. But once you get it organized, everything kind of finds its own balance. But every time there's a growth spurt, it just demands a great deal of your time.
Yeah, no kidding. Before we get started into everything, I'm going to let everybody know that Gabe's website is SuarezInternational.com, and that's probably the best place for people to find out about everything Suarez, right?
Yeah, we had we had a number of different websites a few years ago, but we brought everything under one umbrella. And so if they go to SuarezInternational.com, and that's S-U-A-R-E-Z and then international all spelled out, .com, that gives them an entry point for everything: the blog, the forum, the store, the training site, you know, the YouTube thing, everything.
Yeah, good, good. I got to tell people, you know, your classes were basically my first exposure to any kind of defensive training. I was one of those IDPA fishing vest wearing competitors for a long time, and I think I've probably graduated from 12 or 13 SI classes taught by John Payne, Glenn Matthews, Randy Harris, and people have heard me talk about it endlessly. But you're also an innovator in product. I guess I'm late to the party, but I just recently started shooting red dots on my Glock 19. Yours. Mm-hmm. Your Trigicon mounted red dots. You've got a similar package for the G43, don't you?
Yeah. You know, we started doing this stuff back in 2009. And, you know, I remember when we first started doing it, everybody thought we're crazy. You know, you put a TV screen on a pistol, what the hell's all that about, you know? And, yeah. You know, today it's kind of a mainstream thing. You know, it all came about from you know, students of mine that you know, little older, and you know, as we both know, you know, you don't maintain everything you have when you're 18 all the way into your 50s and so on. And
isn't that
one
the
of
truth?
Those things? Yeah, one of those things is your vision. And so I was having a lot of guys saying, you know, Gabe, I can't see my front sight. I can't. You know, I can't refine it and everything else, and they were putting these, you know, big balloon sights and all this other kind of stuff on there. And you know, and I thought, man, I got to find something to make these guys, you know, solve their problem, make it easier for them. So we started experimenting with, well, you know, we run red dots on all our rifles. What if we did this with a handgun? And you know, so we expanded from there. And the most recent development has been, you know, with the advent of the Glock 43, which is a very, very popular pistol. You know, well, what if we could do this with a 43? And, you know, so we started trying out some different sites, and I ran into the Shield guys, not the Shield pistol, but the Shield sites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At SHOT Show, and you know, I got a sample and took it back and, you know, started playing around with it. And it's just right to fit the slide of a Glock 43. So, you know, we've been doing that for a little while now. We do the entire package, the gutter snipe package. And it takes that little pistol, you know, away from the last-ditch backup kind of thing to, You know, if it was other than the capacity, which we extend a little bit, but other than the capacity, it puts it in the first line fighting handgun category.
And you've also got plus two mag extensions, don't you?
Yeah. We do a number of things. We've got we do sights for it. Everybody wants to change the sights. One day Glock will get the word and they'll start putting sights on their guns and then we'll all be out of business.
Well, I don't know about that. It depends on what kind of sights they would put
probably
on.
Not.
I mean, because if they're going to put a red dot on, they got to change out the sights anyway.
Yeah, no. But we do regular iron sights. We're doing the milling for the slides. We have barrels for them, these are legitimate match barrels. These are made from Lothar Walther blanks that we import and cut and fit and so on, both threaded and plain. Our triggers, of course, and then the mag extension. So just about everything that you could do to enhance this pistol and make it more shootable, we've done to it.
And can people send in the G43 they have and have you do the package on it?
Yeah, absolutely. We do it both ways. We can do it on your pistol, or we have the pistols here constantly, building them and ready to go. My gunsmith staff is starting to get gray hair. I keep them so busy.
So you've turned the G43 from a backup to a relatively serious fighting pistol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole thing is, we don't live in the same era that we had in 1987 or 1997. And I think there's a lot of people in the gun industry that are still, I hate to use the term, but it describes their perspective. They're living in the past.
True.
Today we've got, the jihadis, of course. I mean, unless you've been living in a cave for the last 15 years, we've got a whole social structure. I don't know. It's not even a religion. It's a movement, a cult. I don't know what the heck it is. But you've got these people. They're a group, and they hate you and me, and they want to kill us. And if we look historically at everything that's gone on the last few years, they're getting pretty good at it.
Yes, they are.
So it's not the drug addict with the tire iron that is the focus of attention now. It's a more sophisticated adversary. We've got all these I don't know what you'd call them either. Probably come up with a good name for them. These urban terrorists. They're not religious in any way. They just have a different ideology, very much like the Symbionese Liberation Army in Los Angeles, years ago, and
yep.
the Weathermen and the Black Guerrilla family, and all those people, and they're just as militant, just as violent as any terrorist that just got off the boat from Syria. And so you've got all of these little subcultures, and not so little, that are running around today with the sole focus of let's kill somebody like Bob or Gabe or someone like us, because we don't like them for whatever reason. So that is the prime focus today. And if you prepare for guys like that, and you run into the beatnik mugger in the parking lot or something, you'll be ready for him. But if you prepare for the lowest threat that you might encounter, and then you face the highest threat you might encounter, you're not going to win.
That's a very good point. People need to prepare for the worst, basically. The worst person that you could possibly run into, that's who you have to be ready for. That's what you're saying, right?
If you were going to go to that Christmas party in San Bernardino, or go have a drink at the nightclub in Orlando, or one of these, and there was going to be a terrorist event, all right, what would you take? And that you could realistically carry with you, and saying, well, I'm not going to go. Well, that's not really the possibility, because you don't know that that's going to happen. Those folks in San Bernardino, Orlando, being a victim of a terrorist attack, that's the last thing on their minds.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So wherever you go, you have to think, okay, if today is when I get to change history, what do I want to take with me? And that 5-shot revolver in the corner pocket may not be the best choice.
Yeah, it might not be, or the Pocket 380 might not be the best choice either.
Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you, I'm sitting here in my office. I mean, I had to run a few errands, as most CEOs have to do during the day. But, you know, in my belt here, I got a Glock 17 with, you know, my slide, all the stuff that we sell because I want the best. A couple of Magpul 21-round magazines on my offside there. And, you know, I've got a knife in my pocket. And that's how I go about my day. You know, I don't wear body armor. You know, I don't carry three guns with me. Not anymore. I don't really feel that that's necessary or required in my day-to-day life. But, you know, I carry enough ammunition with me that if I faced, a Mateen or a Farouk or, you know, maybe just a group of these thugs that decided, hey, let's go beat up the old white guy, you know, that I could give a good account of myself. A better account than if I was armed with something out of convenience.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you like those Magpul 21-round mags?
I like them. You know, when they first came out, you know, the internet, of course, oh, well, you know, these are only good for the range. And, you know, and I got to say, when they came out, that was my thought, too. You know, we got them. We're good friends with the Magpul guys, you know, and so, you know, they sent some out, and I'm like, okay, you know, let me work with these. And I started using them in classes, and I started using them in training. And, you know, by golly, they hold up really, really well, you know.
Yeah.
And you can take them apart to clean them without any drama or fanfare or anything. And I somewhere along the line, I just, you know what, the heck with it. I'm just going to carry these instead of the OEM. And now my OEM are in the training bag, and I usually lend them to students in class, and I don't bring enough magazines, and all that I carry are Magpul mags.
Yeah, good. That's a great endorsement. And, you know, Gabe, I've always respected you as an innovator because you seem to be either the first one or one of the first people out there when there's something new, and then you test it, you perfect it, you don't sell junk, you sell stuff that has been – that you've put through the tests.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I'm blessed to live up here in Prescott, Arizona. I could get my Tahoe, and in 10 minutes, you know, I'm back in a national forest area, and I can, you know, if something comes in, I need to go and shoot it. You know, a customer's gun needs to be fired and zeroed and stuff. You know, 10 minutes, I'm out there, and I can take care of it. I'll be out there for an hour, maybe. I'll be back. It's ready to go. So I don't have to, like most others, I don't have to pre-plan, oh my gosh, I need to get to the range. When am I going to do this? Well, the range is just down the block.
Yeah, that's great. That's a
so
good
I
asset.
To shoot stuff and test stuff. And, you know, our ability to shift from concept or theory to working concept to execution to product, our tempo for doing that is very, very fast because, you know, I've got very talented people that we work with here that I can take an idea to them and I can say, listen, make this happen. Within a couple of weeks, I've got a working prototype, you know, and then I can test it. I can give it to my guys to shoot, you know, and take it back to the prototype guys. Okay, change this and this. You know, within a few months, we've got a product shipping, which I think is really cool. Most companies can't do that.
Yeah, most of them can't, and you can. So, you know, being first or being an innovator also comes with controversy, and you've had your share. Talk
oh,
about
on.
Yeah, just a little bit, but I think it's good, and I think it's healthy because people that have some common sense at least will take an analytical look and say, okay, what's Gabe doing here? So, what's his purpose? And hopefully, they have a little bit of an open mind. So, the first thing I want you to do is talk about why a red dot on a pistol, even like a G43 or a G17? I got my G19 with an RMO7 on it. Why a red dot?
Okay, well, that's an easy question to answer because, again, in today's world, the threats that we face have changed from what maybe, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, what most gun people, and this is realistic, what most people, gun people concerned about, you know, a couple of thugs, a couple of gang members or whatever, you know, at close range and all this sort of thing. And, you know, for that, really, all you needed to do was just, you know, get kind of pretty good at drawing and pointing in, you know, all the stuff that you heard about back in that day about, you got to see the sights, and, you know, that was really not true, you know. you know, you're within 10, 15 feet of somebody and all you have is a chest shot, you know, you can take a slide, knock the sights completely off, and probably do pretty good.
I've done it.
Yeah, as an experiment, I think in class one time, I ran, what the heck was it? I forgot the time, but it was like a ridiculous time, 6 seconds or something like that, on an El Presidente, which is not really a tactical drill. It's, you know, but on a slide that had no sights on it whatsoever. And, you know, and I scored pretty good. You know, just look, you can do this, but you, but anyway, so that was then, this is now. What do we face today? All right. Again, you've got the multiple aggressive large adversaries, okay? The terrorists, the jihadis, armor is very, very prevalent today.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, you know, the armor that I wore when I was in law enforcement, which was, by today's standards, I might as well just been wearing a T-shirt. But armor that will stop rifles, okay, that sort of thing. So if you add up all of these issues that we potentially face today, okay, you've got the same issues that we had back in like 1997, but in addition to that, you have these new threat paradigms that we have to face.
Yeah.
So armed terrorist wearing a bomb vest or armor and the need for extreme surgical accuracy, not only up close, but also at distance. Well, that translates into a pistol that I want to have, number one, high capacity, okay? Now, granted, the .43, it's a compromise weapon, okay? It's what you carry when you can't carry a 19 or a 17 or something along those lines.
Exactly.
But you want as high capacity as you can get. You want a trigger that doesn't get in your way. You want it to be safe, but you don't want it to be something that's going to derange your alignment on target, okay? So easy to use, crisp, not creepy, not draggy, not heavy, all right? You want accuracy that is insane. So you want the most accurate barrel, the most accurate ammunition that you can, that money can buy, okay?
Okay.
Minute of man is not acceptable for this. What we're talking about is minute of face. In my classes, you'll have noticed that in the last few years, we shifted from center of mass to center of face.
All right? I have noticed that, yes.
There's always a reason for what we do, all right? And, you know, without giving away a lot of details, you know, John will tell you, you know, if you see him, you know, we've been working with some counterterrorist groups, law enforcement counterterrorist groups here in the U.S., all right? And the intel that we have received, which is, it can be shared, all right, it's not, we're not really talking out of school or anything like this. The bad guys are wearing armor, okay, again, you remember the Dallas shooting,
mm-hmm.
You know, you had that one guy, I forgot his name now, but he was wearing, he was wearing rifle plates, okay, at least that's the information that I got. You've got, these terrorists that are wearing, IEDs, and my guys have told me that these IEDs are very unsophisticated because the body of knowledge, the subject matter experts on constructing explosives haven't made it across the pond, which is why it's so important that the U.S. prevent, you know, these guys from coming over, but be that as it may,
yeah.
The explosives are very unsophisticated, and if you shoot the explosives will go off, okay?
Okay.
So we can't shoot center of mass anymore. We have to go for the face. You know, if you shoot for the face, chances are that you will hit the brain. Your chances of incapacitating the bad guy, and by that, let's not mince words, your chances of killing the bad guy, all right, are a lot better by going to the face than trying to stay with center mass.
Yeah, and let me interject something here if I can real quick. I've said this, you know, endlessly for the past 8 years that I've been doing this show. If the bad guy has made the bad decision to attack you and he dies when you're trying to defend yourself, so be it. I mean, that was his choice that he made. You're just trying to stop him from killing you.
Yeah, you know, and I'll address that in a moment here. But so you take all of these issues, all right, and so what do you need? You need a pistol that's easy to shoot, okay, which means trigger the way it feels in your hand and everything else, a pistol that is not so heavy that you're probably going to leave it at home and carry something lighter. So it's got to be convenient to carry for your body type and normal social environment and whatnot. It's got to be accurate. It, you know, if God was making a pistol, how accurate would he make it? You know what I mean? That's got to be the standard. We don't attain that standard, but boy, you know, we don't want to take any shortcuts, okay? And, you know, so you want to make it as accurate as possible. Accurate is the shooter, the ammo, and the barrel, okay? And then you want the sighting system that you put on there to allow you to take those surgically precise shots at any reasonable distance. You put all those things together, and it's like, well, you know, I want a red dot on my pistol. You know, if that's the requirement, why would I not want a red dot? And the end result of this is you've got guys that, when in the old days when they were talking about center of mass, now we can talk about right eye or left eye. It's that kind of accuracy. You know, where I remember when I first, you know, did the advanced gun sight thing was back in, I think, 90 or 91, you would go prone to fire at 50 yards. Today we're firing from standing and hitting steel at 100. That's everybody in class.
Yeah.
Okay? And what allows us to do that is that we take something out of the equation. You know, if you put the red dot on there and you can hold it steady enough, which is a matter of technique and learning, you can get a hit on that. Okay? So, you know, you got a student that can fire on demand, standing up, drawing from the holster, hitting steel over and over and over and over at 100 yards. Okay, now you put him in a CQB environment, and you go, okay, see that guy over there at 15 yards? Shoot him in the head. Boom, it's done. No hesitation, no, you know, concern about missing. It's done because it's easy, and the technology allows us to drive the skill sets so far beyond what they were that what was impossible in the past is now run of the mill.
And it seems like there are a certain segment of shooters and people in the gun industry that don't want to embrace that technology and that technique.
Well, that's true. I mean, but that's true of any industry.
Yeah, true.
You know, I remember when Glocks first appeared on the scene in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, the 1911 crowd, they were, oh, you know, good heavens, you know, John Wayne would never carry something like that, you know. And, you know, I remember in my discussions with Jeff Cooper that, you know, he faced the same thing from the revolver crowd, you know. Well, you know, Bill Jordan would never carry something like, you know, that sort of thing. And so, but, you know, there's innovation always moves ahead. And the guys that want to be on the cutting edge, that want to be good, that self-select to run to the sound of the guns, instead of hiding under a desk, they're always going to adopt those technologies because they always want that edge. You know, if that edge just gives them a sliver of an advantage, they want that.
Yeah. Well, and in this evil world, because I think it's a whole lot more evil than it ever was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, during the time period of some of the guys you just mentioned, like you stated earlier in the podcast, this is a different kind of threat today than it was back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So let's talk about the stakeout shotgun you've got then. What is that?
Okay. Well, you know, it's something we were playing around with for quite a while, but, you know, technology sometimes is hampered by regulation, okay? I'll leave it at that for now, but we played around with the concept of, you know, what can we do with shotguns? You know, for two reasons. One, commercial, of course, because, you know, whatever we do to make money. You know, Elon Musk is not coming up with SpaceX for the betterment of mankind. You know, he's going to get paid.
Okay? Exactly.
So, you know, that's always been part of the equation. But, you know, it's also, well, you know, is there some area that is not being addressed with the prevalent weapons of the era that we can now address with something? And, you know, we started looking at shotguns again when we started seeing some of the, you know, I guess police administrators would call it social unrest, okay? You know, we would call it thugs rioting and attacking cars and, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails at people and all that kind of stuff, you know. Right away I'm thinking, well, you know, a shotgun is perfect for this because the nature of the weapon allows you to get away with less than perfect marksmanship.
True.
And, you know, it gives you an advantage inside the 25-yard realm. If the fight goes beyond that, a shotgun's not the best, granted. But if it's in that realm, and you're talking about low light, you're talking about a rapidly moving situation, and so on, you know, there's a lot going for the shotgun. So we started kind of playing around with it again, and, you know, the industry, in fact, I was telling one of my guys today when we went to get coffee, that the industry has been changing so rapidly the last few years. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't stay on top of these changes. They almost ignore them. I sit for an hour every day and I look at all the news feeds and all the things that pertain to my industry, and I think, how can I leverage this? How can I use this to our advantage? What can I develop from this information? And so I started to see this pistol grip only shotgun concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still very much a gray area. And quite honestly, I think had Hillary won the election, there probably wouldn't be a stakeout because, you know, in times of oppression, nobody treads in those gray areas.
No kidding. That is, yeah. That's the truth. I'm glad you brought that up. I think all of us in the firearms industry are counting our blessings right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but anyway, so we started playing around with this and, you know, the gray area kind of thing. And, you know, I talked to the guys over at Shockwave, you know, very nice guys, very, you know, forthcoming and everything else. And, you know, and I got all of the documentation and, you know, and I'm looking at all this stuff and there's really no reason why we can't do this. Okay. You know, then of course at SHOT Show, Mossberg brought out their Shockwave 590. And I thought, okay, you know, based on all this information and the fact that a company like Mossberg has stepped into the gray area deeply, I think that, you know, I can now take the steps to bring out this weapon. You know, there's an old saying, the second mouse gets the cheese.
That's true.
All right. So I guess with this, I'm the second mouse.
Second mouse, right.
Yeah. So, you know, so the application for this is a very small, compact, easy to carry around weapon. Okay, albeit it can't technically be concealed on your person, but you can put it in a bag or what have you. You know, I found a clarinet bag on Amazon. And,
really?
And I bought it. It was like $20 or something like that. And it's perfect. The stakeout fits right in there, and you know, you got a little pouch on the side for a few extra BBs, and you know, you're all set to carry to the range. You know,
that's
so
cool.
You know, it's intended as a close-range power tool that, you know, if you are facing the sort of threat that involves multiple adversaries in a rapidly moving situation where the tempo of events doesn't allow for traditional marksmanship principles, where this weapon can be brought into action, and by virtue of the ammunition that it launches, it can overcome all of those circumstances and allow you to get hits in a very rapid, timely manner, devastating hits that wouldn't be possible. And I need to reiterate that they wouldn't be possible if you were firing a weapon that fired a single projectile, like an AR, like some sort of pistol caliber carbine, maybe even a handgun. Okay?
So you just talked about the ammunition that it launches. What do you recommend?
Well, we've been playing around a lot with a couple of different ammo types. they're both reduced recoil, okay? I think that unless, you know, you're built like Brock Lesnar, you need to use a reduced recoil ammo on this.
Right.
We're playing around with a Federal Premium number 4 buck, which has a whopping 34 pellets.
You know? Number four and, buck, 34 pellets. Okay.
Yeah, and then the number one, I forgot how many. I think it's 15 pellets. You know, they've both done very well. The number one is ridiculous. It's almost like shooting slugs. So you lose a little bit of the advantage of the spread, which I think is important in this.
That's probably where the number four buck would really help out.
That's exactly. Yeah.
And so you got a weapon where you can't make the shots with a single projectile weapon, and that's useful. That's definitely got its place.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that a lot of people are realizing that. You know, we've, I think we've built and shipped, about 50 or 60 of these things already. And, you know, we're only talking about it being available for the last, couple of months or something. You know, the shotgun seemed to wane in popularity because of the prevalence and availability of the carbine, but you know, the shotgun is just as applicable and just as useful today as it was 20, 30 years ago. You know, I remember when I was in law enforcement, I took some shots with my Remington 870, you know, in gunfights with bad guys where there is no way that I would have gotten a hit if I was using an MP5 or an AR. There's no way. But I got hits with the 12-gauge because of the spread of the ammunition.
Yeah. Now, so for your stakeout, you start with an 870, don't you?
Yeah, we get pistol grip only. It's important. You can't just buy a regular 870 and get the hacksaw out. It's got to be a pistol grip only, and you know, there's a couple of models that Remington makes. And then we basically just strip everything down, leave the receiver and the magazines tube, and start from scratch and rebuild from there.
Yeah, everything I've looked at online about that stakeout, that seems like a pretty neat weapon. I think I'm going to have to put that in my budget.
Yeah, John actually is going to have one with him probably today or tomorrow. I shipped it overnight to him for a class that he's doing. So, there's going to be one in your neighborhood if you're interested.
I'm interested. And is SI going to have classes built around it?
You know what? We might. I have to see what the popularity is first and you know, how many are out there. We'll probably do like one class maybe for the staff and former staff, you know, just to kind of get some, you know, propaganda photos and whatnot. it's a very interesting tool. You know, we got one of our guys, Brent Yamamoto. He's as skilled a martial artist as I've ever seen in my life. He's working up a block of instruction on, you know, how to use this thing as an impact weapon.
Okay.
Which it lends itself to that so beautifully. It's almost amazing.
I didn't think of that. I'm going to be interested to see what he comes up with.
Yeah.
So, Gabe, address your critics. You got critics about not just your training and shooting technique, but you got critics about the weapons that you're designing. You've had them for a long time, and I know you're real good at addressing your critics. So, talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, people criticize me for a number of reasons. You know, the training. Well, you know what? The training speaks for itself. You know, we've got people all over the world, not just, you know, guys here in the U.S., but guys all over the world using this stuff. And, you know, I get reports all the time, and, you know, I respect their privacy. I think there are other schools that if one of their students got in a gunfight and managed to win, boy, it would be all over their Facebook page and everything else. We've got our students doing that almost every week. But, you know, I respect their privacy, and a lot of them are professionals, and, you know, it's who am I to try, well, I'm going to make a few bucks out of this guy. That's not classy, so I don't do that. But, you know, our stuff is combat proven over and over and over and over, and it goes against traditional training. What I found is that oftentimes the traditional mindset for a lot of people almost becomes like a religion. And it would be like grabbing somebody, you know, a Catholic or a Buddhist or what have you, sitting them down and telling them, your faith is wrong. Well, they're going to resist that every step of the way. right?
Sure, they are.
Raised to believe certain things and so on and so forth. And, you know, it's the same thing with the gun community. With the weapons that we sell, you know what, they're not cheap. But neither is, an Ed Brown 1911 or Armin Swenson 1911 or anything like that. But the people that want excellence, they're going to pay for excellence. You know, Rolex is selling a lot of watches. Mercedes is selling a lot of cars and all of that sort of thing. The Mercedes may not get you to work any, you know, better than the used car at the Toyota dealer, and the Rolex may not tell time any better than the Timex you got at Walmart. But people want excellence. They want quality. They want better. And they'll pay for it. And we deliver all of those things. We deliver products that will do whatever the end user asks of those products, within reason. So there's always going to be someone that's going to say that's too expensive and so on and so forth. Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with not having the means to afford a Rolex or a Mercedes. But the thing is that you shouldn't try and convince everyone that the Hyundai is as good as a Mercedes and that the Casio is as good as a Rolex, because they're not.
Exactly.
And when they try and put that argument forth, it just makes them look stupid.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that up, because people in the gun industry do that. They will try to say that, well, the $400 pistol that they bought at Academy, and they're using whatever it came equipped from the factory out of the box, is just as good as one of your 17s with Trijicon RMR and your barrels.
Right. Now, that pistol that they bought, okay, that used Glock 17, okay, Gen 1 or whatever that they bought, is it a piece of crap? No.
No, it's not a piece of crap.
It's an adequate pistol, all right, and there's no dishonor in being poor, because I'll tell you what, there was a time in my life when I was poor. When I was teaching karate, my first job out of my own, my diet consisted of peanut butter sandwiches and, rice and I lived on $35 a week. Okay. But does that make that lifestyle optimum? Oh, absolutely not. Okay.
No.
So there's no dishonor in being poor, but it's certainly a mark of foolishness to try and convince everyone that being poor is just as good as being wealthy, because it's not.
Well, and you're exactly right. And there's a big difference between a Mercedes or a Rolex and a firearm. You most people don't use a Mercedes or a Rolex to defend their life.
Right. But when they crash or something, I guess the 80s would be important. But
it'd be important, yeah. But they're not actively defending their life normally with a car or with a watch. But when it comes to a pistol, like we talked about earlier in the interview, now you're talking about something that's got some serious implications to your life and your family's life.
Yeah, but let me add a little bit further, okay? There are overachievers in every industry, okay, in every endeavor, outliers. So I build my weapons for the outliers, the guys that if they're, at, the public venue, let's say a mall or at a school or, a party or any place where there would be a lot of people, okay, and they hear, Allah Akbar and shots being fired and people screaming, okay, they are the ones that self-select to go and shoot the bad guy, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the ones that think, oh, my gosh, my family's not here. I can run out of that door, and I'll be safe, okay? So let me get this straight, all right? You have trained yourself to a high level of skill. You make a point to carry a weapon with you, a very high-end weapon, all day long, every day, 24/7, 365. You spend time on the blog talking to like-minded people. You spend your vacation and your money and everything going to training classes. And now God puts you on purpose
in that situation,
at that point in time, to stand in front of the son of the devil, and you run away.
Ooh, that's a That's a good that's a good point.
You know what? If that's what some guys want to do, that's okay. I'm not going to get in their way. I'm going to say, hey, the door's over there. I'm glad you're gone because it's my job. I'm here on this earth, and God put me here in this room to save all of these people by shooting the bad guy. And that's why I have the Glock 17 with the red dot. That's why I lift weights. That's why I stay fit. That's why I do what I do, because if it may not be me, all right, but it may be one of my students that I have talked to, that I have passed on the attitude and the mindset, that I have given the tools and the skills to be able to take that guy out.
Interesting. That's profound stuff right there, Gabe, because we all wrestle with our conscience and what we would do in the certain situations we could find ourselves in. And there is sort of a mantra out there that people say, well, you need to run if at all possible. And maybe in some cases that's true, but I don't see myself as a runner.
No. Well, you know, we are runners, but we run toward the guns.
Yeah, I don't see myself as somebody. Now, you know, I mean, I don't know. I struggle with that, because if there was a situation where I could easily get out the side door, I may do it. But then again, if I see he's got a gun pointed at three kids, I'm not running out that side door.
That's right. You know, the thing is, look, if you don't know what's going on and you just hear shots in the distance, it's one thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there you are, you're sitting there having your Starbucks when the two guys in the overcoats with AKs walk into the, you know, and they don't know that you're there. And it's 2017 America, okay? We know why they're there, okay?
Yeah.
So what do you do? Do you remove yourself from that problem and allow all those people to die? Or do you stand up and change history? And the only two people that die in that environment are the two bad guys that came to kill everyone.
Yeah, and even if I fail and I get killed in the process of stopping those two guys, I think I could answer for myself when Judgment Day comes.
You know, I think so. And I think, look, if there is a lack of capability, okay, you know, I mean, what can you expect from someone that you know, okay, there's really nothing you could do, all right? But if there is something that you could do, and it would, because of your training and the technology that you carry with you, responding and reducing and eliminating that threat would be easy, and yet you choose to not do so, okay? Now, look, we can get philosophical about this. You know that I'm a believer. I'm not the type of Christian most people expect. I was told once, I've never met Christians like you guys. Well, stand by. But, you know, the Lord said, pick up your cross and follow me, all right?
Yeah, yes, he did.
Now, we all have a cross, all right? If you're a writer, your cross is to write the best that you can and convey sentiment in words. If your cross is to be a good hand-to-hand teacher, then you need to be the best hand-to-hand teacher possible, and so on. And, you know, that's part of my thing, okay? But if your cross is also, God made you as a warrior. He gave you the mental acuity, the focus, the heart of a lion, okay? And you refuse to pick up that cross and go attack the terrorist? I don't know. I think, and I could be wrong because I'm not a pastor and I didn't stay at the Holiday Inn or anything like that, but I think God would be a little disappointed.
Well, there, you know, again, there are many examples in the Bible where God equipped people for battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it would take way too long for me to go into every one of them. But, you know, if people want to send me a message privately, I can give them several examples of that. And so if those people disobey God, and what's going to happen then? You know, so again, not to get too philosophical or religious or anything like this, but you're talking about warriors. You're talking about citizen warriors that are among us, that walk among us every day.
You self-select. No one says, you are this, you are designated as... No, everybody self-selects. You either self-select to be part of that group, or you self-select to not be a part of that group. And it's okay, you know. Not everybody's called to be, you know, that sort of thing. But if you are, and there's plenty of guys that are, okay, don't all of a sudden, when you are placed there in the moment of truth, oh, well, you know, Masada Yub said to run away. You know, no, that's not our thing.
Well, and also, I want to add something to that. Even if you're not self-selecting to go in there and charge after gunfire, maybe it's a home defense situation. Maybe some thugs are coming into your house and they mean some serious harm to you and your family. Why not have the best equipment in that situation?
Absolutely.
Why not have the pistol with your red dot on it? Why not have the stakeout shotgun?
You know,
why not have that?
When technology doesn't make a difference, then it doesn't matter. You know, a toothbrush. Okay, I mean, the technology on that hasn't really changed in 100 years, right? So, is it going to make that much difference if you use a? You know, absolutely not. But you know, here's an example. All right.
Yeah.
When the kids first learn to drive, you know, most parents, you know, go out and buy them whatever's cheap and so on. But you know, where we live, there's a lot of accidents and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's, you know, from elderly drivers, you know, because Arizona is very loose about maintaining, you know, people's driver's license, even when they probably shouldn't have them. And also, you know, there's a lot of, you know, texting and driving and a lot of that sort of thing. And so, you know, I thought, okay, do I want to go and buy these guys the cheapest car I can possibly, you know, or do I want to buy them something that's going to be, you know, safe? And because technology will make a difference. You know, there are vehicles that, you know, you can generally walk away from an accident that would, you know, kill most people, and it's because of the way construction of the car. So, you know, we got them a couple of secondhand German cars because the studies that I did, the technology of those, and, you know, they weren't cheap. They, you know, we paid money for these and so on.
Yeah.
But, you know, can you imagine you buy some cheap motor vehicle or something, and then, heaven forbid, the worst happens. You're always going to be going, you know, I could have bought that Audi. I could have bought that whatever. And, you know, who knows? They might have. So, you know, you're there. You take a shot at the bad guy. You miss, and then he kills a family member of yours. You know, you're always going to. If only I had spent a little bit more money on better ammunition. If only I had attended that class. If only, by then it's too late.
If only I had carried my 15-round pistol instead of my 7-round. Exactly. Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. You know, you have to make these decisions ahead of time, because at the moment of truth, you know, you can't go, oh, time out. Let me rewind the video. And start over again. I want to do over, just like on the video game.
Yeah.
No, you can't. You're there. Handle it. Okay? So, you know, now, can someone who is of the right mind and skilled manage to muddle through with maybe inadequate equipment? Yeah, absolutely. But wouldn't it be better if they had the best equipment that money could buy? Absolutely.
Yeah, and there are plenty of examples of people who have prevailed with less than optimal equipment. But like you said, if it's in your budget, if you're willing to train with it, why not have something better?
Sure.
Why not? I mean, that's the whole premise here. Well, Gabe, I've asked all the questions I wanted to ask. I like to always give guests the last word. So, you know, go. What else do you have to add?
Well, I mean, nothing. It's been a pleasure to, you know, to be your guest again, and you know, we're constantly driving the art forward and moving ahead, and you know, I remember, you know, you mentioned about the tractors and stuff. I remember there was a meme floating around on Facebook a while back. I don't remember the guy's name, because I'm not into the Hollywood thing, but the guy that played Iron Man.
Oh,
you know who I mean.
I know who you mean. I can't think of his name right now.
He'll probably be.
Isn't it Robert Downey Jr.? Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
Robert Downey Jr. Anyway, so he's standing there, you know, with it in his, you know, his billionaire, you know, Iron Man thing, holding a martini, you know, and, you know, and it says, no matter what you do, there are those that will disapprove of you. So do what the F you want anyway. You know, And so that's always my philosophy, you know.
It's true. There are always people who will disapprove.
That's okay. They can do it. You know, we have a mission. We have an objective, and we're driving hard and fast toward it. And we never rest on our laurels. You've been a friend of our organization, a tribal elder, I should say. For a very long time. And
yes.
You know, you can see that what I'm saying is true. We never sit back and, okay, now we get to chill out. No, we're always pushing, always driving, always moving ahead. And that's what I will continue to do as long as God keeps me here and doesn't reassign me.
And that is, yeah, I say the same thing. That's the mark of truly successful people. Those that always possess a drive, those that don't quit, and in the face of criticism, they don't quit. You know, I tell you what, Gabe, if I quit when I faced a little bit of criticism about my podcast, I think I probably would have quit about 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, because yeah. It's amazing. I could write a very, very long book on the criticism that I've received by email and several other ways, just on my little show here that I do once a week, and you can't stop. You can't stop.
No, we have a far higher calling than the approval of lesser people.
That's true. Well, thank you, Gabe, and I really appreciate the time, and let's do a part two on this, and hopefully it won't be so hard to organize.
All right, brother, we'll do it.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, many thanks to Gabe. I appreciate him taking his time. You know, he's a very busy guy, and it was not easy to schedule this interview. Couple comments that I want to make. I've said for many years on this podcast that if I am defending my life, or if I'm defending the life of a loved one, my primary goal is to stop the bad guy from doing what he's doing, or the terrorist, or whoever it is. If that person dies because I chose to defend myself or defend others, then so be it. You know, God says, thou shalt not murder. But sometimes if you kill somebody in the act of self-defense, I think that's a different story. And so I just want to put that out there, that I am going to do whatever it takes, and I kind of agree with Gabe on this. I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect myself. Now, you have to make a choice. If you want to be somebody that actually tries to end the situation and you use your gun to end the situation where someone is about to kill many people or loved ones of yours, that's your choice. If you choose that you want to get out of the area and make that your first objective is to run, that's your choice too. I'm not saying that either one of those is wrong. I'm not saying that either one of those is wrong. I'll tell you this. If I am somewhere where a bad guy comes in with an AK or an AR, and he's got bombs strapped to him, and it's perfectly obvious he's a jihadist, and I'm in this building, and maybe my family is there, and if I see that he's got the gun pointed at me, a family member, innocent children or something, and he's about to kill him, I don't think I could live with myself, and I don't think I could answer very well on Judgment Day, if I could answer the question as to why didn't I do something. Now, if somebody is trying to attack me, and I can get out of there safely, and I know I can get out of there safely and quickly, and probably nobody else is going to get hurt, then that's probably what I'm going to do. And that's a personal choice. It's a personal choice. It's a choice of conscience that you have to make. And, you know, I hope I'm never in that situation. Like I've said many times, I really hope I'm never in that situation. I love shooting guns. I love going to the range. I love training. I don't look for the day where I have to use my gun in self-defense. I'm ready for that day. I believe I'm ready for that day. But I don't go looking for that day. But I am sure not going to allow a lot of innocent people to die, especially if they're loved ones of mine, and not try to do anything about it. So I'll just put that out there. It's not my intent to go murder people. I want to make that very, very clear for anybody that tries to twist my words. But if the bad guy dies trying to attack me or a member of my family, oh well, he should have picked a different target. And that's all I'll say about that. So check out Gabe's website, SuarezInternational.com. Everything we talked about on this interview, you can find there. And again, as I mentioned earlier, Warrior Talk, the forum. And again, many, many thanks to Gabe Suarez. Folks, tune in again next week. I have another interview. After next week, I'm going to start the every 2 weeks schedule. I know last week I said I'm going to start putting out a show every 2 weeks instead of every week. Well, since I have these awesome interviews, last week with Cheryl Todd, this week Gabe Suarez, next week I'll keep it as a surprise, but somebody else I think you're going to enjoy listening to. After these three interviews go out, then I'm going to start doing this podcast and putting out one episode every couple of weeks until I get caught up with everything else in my life. All right, folks, that's it. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, read your Bible every day, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.